If it's nerdy, we're into it.
Gaming, movies, television, wrestling, comics, whatever. We are Kyle Eckert and Chris Heck, two lifelong friends with a passion for the world of geekery.
And this is the Geek Ketchup Podcast.
What is up, folks? I'm Kyle Eckert.
And I'm Chris Heck.
And you are listening to another Geek Ketchup Wrestling Recap, a spotlight series where we break down the action from the biggest pay-per-views from the world of professional wrestling. In this recap, we're talking about the WWE's Royal Rumble 2021, the 34th event under the Royal Rumble banner that took place on January 31st, 2021 in the WWE Thunderdome. Before we ring the bell and get started, we wanted to take a moment, as always, to say thank you for listening, and if you haven't already, check us out on social media, Geek Ketchup Podcast on Facebook and YouTube, at Geek Ketchup Pod on Instagram and Twitter. Links to all of these accounts are available on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com. There's even a link to our Patreon and PayPal pages if you'd like to support the show. Of course, if you already follow us and would like to help us spread the love for the world of geekery, we ask that you leave us a review on your favorite podcasting platform and share us with your friends and family. Now, on to the pay-per-view. This year's Royal Rumble event had five main card matches and one on the pre-show, but all six bouts were for a coveted prize, whether it be for a championship or for the chance at a championship. We won't hold up any longer, so Chris, let's get in the old squared circle and talk about that pre-show kickoff match, which was for the Women's Tag Team Championship. It's all champions Asuka and Charlotte Flair taking on the team that is finally in sync with one another in Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. The match started out with a classic collar and elbow lockup between Shayna and Charlotte, and then proceeded to have the usual tag team match elements. Charlotte got Shayna worked into the corner for a beatdown, then Asuka comes in, and then, of course, Shayna took control and got Asuka over to her corner for more of the same. The two teams battled back and forth with a couple of decent spots. We saw Charlotte hit some pretty sweet apron moves on Nia. Asuka did a flip-over powerbomb from the turnbuckle on Nia Jax as well. Add in a couple near falls for each team with the partner breaking it up. It was, all in all, a lot of just standard tag team action that we see throughout, you know, tag team wrestling.
Yeah, unfortunately, I missed this match because I was cooking dinner a little bit later than I had planned, but you never know when you're making something like beef stew. It just takes some time. You got to give it that love to get just right. So it pushed me into essentially eating when this match came on, and I just didn't have it on the actual TV. But honestly, I was glad to see that Nia and Shayna ended up doing so well here.
Yeah, I'm glad that they finally brought them back to NSYNC, like I said. They've had them on the outs for a bit of their tag team, but they don't trust each other. And they continued with some of that. And we'll talk about a little later when we see them in the Rumble. They continued a bit of that storyline. But it is nice to see them basically solidify them as a real tag team, because I think that's something the women's tag team division needs, is legitimate tag teams and not just two singles competitors slapped together.
Yeah, I don't mind when they do that occasional oddball team, as I like to call it, where they take top superstars that are individual superstars and put them together. We've talked about it before. You know, it's something that happens throughout the history of wrestling, and sometimes it's really good, other times it's not. You know, Charlotte and Asuka being champs here for a little while wasn't the worst thing in the world, but I prefer that when they do that, there's strong story, there's a real reason behind it. You know, going back to like Rock and Stone Cold or somebody being thrown together, like they were in the middle of a hardcore feud that I think led up to a Mania match. So it was like a really big chunk of that storyline. Whereas we just don't have that going on right now between Charlotte and Asuka. They've kind of already done their thing. They're not actively feuding, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So not the worst thing in the world, but if it's not really going to play into the story, I would much rather be a strong, legitimate tag team. And Shayna and Nia have that ability to just be powerhouses.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you're not going to have a big name like Bayley and Sasha, like, give us another team like this that can really set the bar and be, like, true gatekeepers for other women's tag teams to form.
Yeah, 100%. I totally agree there. So as the match unfolded, you know, we saw a couple solid double hot tags, which of course had Charlotte getting a double natural selection
Ooh.
On Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. That was pretty cool. And of course, all of this led to a more classic tag team moment where all things break down and we go into a semi-tornado tag situation where everybody is getting their moves in. Of course, in that moment, we saw Asuka with a leaping butt bump on the outside of the ring. Flair hit her typical moonsault off the top turnbuckle to the outside. She actually almost overturned, and she was so close to the announcer's table, I thought if she had overturned anymore, she would have hit the back of her head on the announcer's table.
Ooh.
But she landed on her feet. You know, she's done it a million times, so she knows what she's doing. Also saw some pretty cool power moves out of Nia. You know, she's a big wrestler, a big presence, and she threw Asuka over the announce table, just completely disrupting all the commentators. That was pretty sweet.
Wow.
But it was around this time that the match started to work towards its finish, which saw Charlotte and Shayna back in the ring, and of course, continuing this other storyline that has Charlotte Flair involved. Ric Flair's music hits, and it causes a distraction for Charlotte. Shayna tries to take the opportunity for the roll-up, but Charlotte kicks out. But then we get a second distraction, as it's Lacey Evans up on the side apron. Charlotte takes a swipe at her. Lacey ducks, drops down off the apron to duck the punch. Shayna tries to pick up another opportunity and puts her in a choke. But once again, Charlotte gets out of it and ends up, you know, turning her attention back to Baszler, fights her, gets her down, gets her in the figure eight. And then here, Lacey Evans gets directly involved because as she's got her in the figure eight, Lacey reaches into the rings and pulls Flair's hands out from under her to break up the submission. And things get a little wonky here because she breaks up the submission. She looks pissed, and she looks to attack Lacey Evans, and so she's totally distracted. Shayna, once again, tries to take advantage of it, but we don't really see what's happening because the camera is actually focused on what's happening outside the ring, where Ric Flair is giving Lacey, could be brass knuckles, but I actually think it was his Hall of Fame ring. He took off, and he gave it to Lacey, but it's difficult to tell. And that's why I said it's a little wonky and got a little strange because it was like the camera crew didn't know where to go.
Gotcha.
So there was action happening in the ring, but you couldn't see it. And then, but you couldn't quite see what was happening outside the ring. It was a lot of like backs and shoulders.
Yeah.
So it was like, they just couldn't get a solid position to showcase what was going on. But what ended up happening is he gave her the Hall of Fame ring. Back to the action in ring, Charlotte's got Shayna in another figure eight. But they're right there on the corner. Lacey slugs her.
Oh, no.
Ref totally not doing his job. He's not paying attention to any of this. Slugs Charlotte Flair, knocks her out. And then another weird camera moment where Nia Jax is now the legal person. So I guess somewhere in the commotion of all of that, of Lacey punching Charlotte and knocking her out, and the camera's focused there, Shayna breaks out of the figure eight and tags in Nia, because the next thing we're seeing is Nia dropping a huge leg drop and getting the pin. 1, 2, 3. Don't ask me where Asuka was. She must have been sleeping behind the announcer's desk. All that really matters, though, is we have new tag team champions in Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax. In fact, tying the record for the most individual and team tag team championships for the women's tag belts at 2.
Setting that bar high, like I said.
Right, yeah.
Nah, it was good to see them win. Definitely have to see exactly what happens. You alluded to it. You know, they continue some of that. Are they together? Are they not fully on the same page storyline a little bit later? But I am interested that you mentioned the cameras, because I didn't see that match, obviously, but I actually made note that there were 2 or 3 moments in this entire pay-per-view where the camera work was a little off, and
yeah.
Usually they're pretty good about it with the WWE production team, and maybe we'll get into it later, but I want to say at least it was a moment somebody got eliminated, and there was a big elimination in the Women's Rumble or something,
yeah.
And they were not even on it at all, and there was just too much going on.
Yeah, just so chaotic.
Maybe the producer was cycling through the cameras wrong or a little slow or something like that, but it was an unusual night for them on that side of things.
Yeah, and we'll definitely touch on that because I do have that noted for the Women's Royal Rumble and the Men's Royal Rumble. It also dates back to what happened last year in the Men's Royal Rumble where we completely missed Edge's return.
True.
But that's 2020 and we're in 2021. It's a whole new Rumble. It's a whole new year. But yeah, I'm right there with you. I like Nia Jax and Shayna in sync as tag team, having the belts again. Hopefully they go on to defend it against, I would assume, the winners of the tag team Dusty Classic.
That would be a good idea.
You know, because that is the gist with the women's tag team belts, is they're supposed to go across all brands, up and down, no matter what. So hopefully we see something cool there. And then hopefully Asuka can return to single status and actually go back to just being the women's Raw champion.
Yeah.
Because they didn't say that once this entire match. Like, Asuka is the women's Raw champion, and she didn't come out with the belt. They didn't mention it, and I'm not even confident it got mentioned later in the Rumble, so I'm throwing some shots at you, WWE. Like, you've got a good talent in Asuka, and she is a champion, and you're basically having everyone play second fiddle to Charlotte Flair again.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I have a sneaky feeling that Becky's going to return. Because they've just kept Asuka really quiet with the Raw Championship, I feel, since she took it over, you know, and the whole passed it on when Becky got pregnant. And maybe it's still a little too soon, but I just have this feeling like, you know, something's going to happen there. They're just going to have them fight. Becky's going to take the belt back immediately, and then we'll kind of go back to the way things should be.
Yeah,
with the
Raw
Women's Championship. But it just kind of became a back burner belt.
It really did, yeah.
On the other side, you had Bayley really doing great with the SmackDown belt, and she kind of became like top woman in the company. Now Sasha over there. So, I don't know. Maybe it all just kind of added up like that, but they need to get it back forefront, especially going into Mania.
Oh, yeah. Well, Asuka did drop it and then, you know, got it back.
Well, that's true.
So, but one way or another, they got to do better with it, and that's our expectation. It is highlight it. It's Mania season. You got to do something important with it.
Yeah.
Before we move on to the main show, we'll talk about our social media vote before the event started. And wow, our social media followers could not have been more wrong. I could not have been more wrong, because I'll say I predicted Asuka Charlotte as well. But there was a 90% to 10% vote for Asuka and Charlotte to retain the belts going into this. So
wow,
It just no one predicted it, you know, and honestly, I chalk that up to Charlotte Flair.
Yeah.
WWE loves Charlotte Flair and she's amazingly talented. And I'm not going to knock that, but it's the Flair factor. You always expect her to win.
Yeah, that is true.
Well, that moves us to the main show, and the main show kicked off with the usual numbers game intro, highlighting a lot of the various stats we've seen over the years from the Royal Rumble, which is always fun to see. But the first match for me was a bit of a twist because I did not expect the WWE Championship, Drew McIntyre, the champion, going up against Goldberg to open the pay-per-view. I know that this is the Royal Rumble, so obviously the men's Royal Rumble is probably going to be the main event, but it did. It just kind of shocked me a little bit that the WWE Championship is the opening match.
Yeah, I was legit nervous about this match going into this. I was nervous for Drew. Goldberg has not looked good in any of his matches since he came back for the last two or three years. He's damn near hurt multiple wrestlers, including the Taker, during that Saudi match, and just looks like, you know, every time he blows up within about 12 seconds.
Right.
And then is just gassed and physically can't do things. But when they opened up with this, I just kind of kept going back and forth, because typically I felt like if they were going to open with a match like this, it wouldn't be a shocker. You know, thinking back to typical Brock Lesnar matches or Goldberg matches at these pay-per-views, they always do them right at the end just so they don't piss everybody off for the entire moment. So I was like, oh, they're going to give it to Goldberg, or maybe that means Drew's going to keep it here, you know? So
yeah.
But going into this, I was just like, Drew is on fire. He's top of his game. He's in his prime. And how is Goldberg still trusted, you know, with the talent here after those last couple of matches? So it was interesting choice regardless.
That's a fair point. It's a fair point. And I take that shot at him, calling him Oldberg. I mean, he's in much better shape than I am, and he's got 20 plus years on me, so I really shouldn't say anything. But
he's not as in good a shape as Edge.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, think about that. Like, Edge was out of the ring for 9 years. Goldberg had already been back for at least the last 2 years, maybe going on 3 years. And I know they had totally different styles, physiques and things like that, but Edge came back in 10 times the shape that Goldberg still was last night. You know?
Yeah,
he's better shape than I am at 50, but I'm just saying, compared to the other wrestlers in his age group, like, I don't know, man.
Yeah. There's a 7-year difference between Edge and Goldberg.
Okay. I'll give him a little bit.
Yeah, Goldberg is 54, Edge is only 47. So, a little bit there. I don't think, I'm with you. I struggled when he came back on Legends Night and challenged Drew. It did make me worried. But either way, it was a quick match nonetheless. I think bell to bell, it was only about 2.5 minutes to 3 minutes, with another, extra 3 to 4 minutes pre-bell action, because right before the bell went off, McIntyre headbutted Goldberg and then hit him with a spear, immediately rolled to the outside where the two exchanged a few like post blows and step blows and apron slams, all culminating in a scenario where Goldberg speared Drew through a barricade all before the match even started, and which honestly is very typical Goldberg fashion, because they need to find ways to extend these matches.
My heart sank when they started pulling the Drew's hurt. I was like, Goldberg's going to win this match.
Yeah.
I was like, what? I was like, no, what is going to happen here? As soon as they did that, I was like, he's going to lose this match. He's going to be all hurt. And I was just like, it's a borderline disrespectful. Like, Goldberg came out talking about how Drew needs respect. I was like, this is borderline disrespectful if this is how he's going to have to drop this belt after all of this. And you had the whole aspect of like, Goldberg's never won the WWE championship, and it's like, but he's already a Hall of Famer, you know.
He doesn't need it. Goldberg doesn't need any more like accolades. He's already got the only one that truly matters. But ultimately the two find their way back to the ring. You know, the bell is about to go off. The ref asked Drew, are you sure you want to continue? Are you sure you want to get the match on? And he responds, ring the damn bell. Sure enough, the bell rings. And literally, this is how the match played out. It's simple. Like I said, 2.5 minutes. We saw a Claymore kick with a pin attempt. Goldberg kicked out. A second Claymore attempt that missed. Goldberg then capitalizes with a spear on Drew. He stumbles up, hits a second spear on Drew, a jackhammer, a pause at the jackhammer. It did look pretty good.
It was his best jackhammer of the return so far.
It definitely was. Yeah. It definitely was.
He was smart to not try and hold him, which he apparently finally learned his lesson. Like, you can't do that anymore, Bill.
You can't do that anymore.
You know, you just got to get him up and take him over.
Yeah, and we'll come back to that because I have a theory on how that one worked out. So Goldberg hits the jackhammer. And then, of course, he goes for the pin because that's the classic maneuver. Drew kicks out. We get a Goldberg shocked face.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God, he kicked out of the jackhammer. Who the hell kicks out of the jackhammer? Then they kind of go to the corner a little bit and hit some blows, separate. And then when they separate, Drew McIntyre hits the biggest Claymore kick I think I've ever seen in my entire life. I'm pretty confident he legitimately kicked Goldberg in the face.
Yeah.
Because they had a bit of an interaction after the match. And he was like, I got you pretty good there. So hits that Claymore kick, goes for the pin. 1, 2, 3. Drew McIntyre retains. We are all happy. He got the respect that somebody that, honestly, I don't understand why he would need Goldberg's respect, because Goldberg is notoriously known for disrespecting the business.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you need the respect of somebody that doesn't respect the business that you're in? Doesn't matter. Drew's our champion. Goldberg lost and can go home.
Yeah. It was the best Goldberg match we've gotten since he's been back.
Yeah.
You know, the way they played it out, it had the story, it had that little bit of drama, got a couple little pops out of me with the way they played it. There was literally a total of 3 moves the whole match.
Oh, yeah.
And you said about, like, slams on the apron. I don't even recall that. I just remember spears, claymores, and the one jackhammer.
Yeah.
And that's, pretty much to be expected. But I was going to throw this at you. There wasn't too much else to say. I was glad to see that Drew did retain, so we don't have to deal with whatever a Goldberg into Mania run would look like, probably for like Brock Lesnar to come back or something. But actually, you mentioned them talking at the end of the match, and he did say that about, and maybe that was about kicking him, but I had this thought that it almost looked like the way Goldberg was looking, and he almost had this like thank you kind of look, like he knew he just had the best match that he's had since he's been back. Maybe he wasn't happy with some of the matches previously, you know? And this is totally just me speculating, but I had this kind of sense of maybe this is the last Goldberg match we're going to get. And that was, you know, him being like, okay, thank you. Got a good one. I can get out of here now, happy. maybe not, but that's just the way I took kind of
that little interaction.
Yeah, the interaction and some of what I caught of what they said.
Yeah.
We'll have to see, but I don't know if you thought anything like that.
I didn't think of it in that way. I thought they were still kind of playing in character, maybe just having a smile, because ultimately, yeah, Goldberg raised up Drew's hand. He shook his hand, then raised it up and gave him the cred. I think the reason that, you know, back to the jackhammer and back to why it was the best Goldberg match so far was because Drew is the first person he's fought in a while that has the core strength to hold himself up.
That's
and
true.
I'm really sorry to The Undertaker, but The Undertaker is damn near 60. I don't expect him to have the core strength to hold himself up that way.
Right.
And Bray Wyatt, the Fiend Bray Wyatt, another guy, I don't, he's jacked. I'm not going to say he's not strong.
Yeah.
But he doesn't strike me as the person that does the vertical core, you know, and Drew is just shredded. So I think all of those factors, I like your idea that Goldberg is happy that he got this one solid match that he can kind of finish his career on. But we'll see. I think any amount of money you throw at him, and he's not going to say no, because he gets a lot of knocks from goofs like us,
yeah,
you know, who say he's too old to hack it. But the fact of the matter is, WWE is reaching out to him.
Oh, for sure. I don't blame him for doing it. I just don't understand how they're still going at him when he's like damn near paralyzed three.
It's true.
Two or three like legit superstars, you know, but
right.
We'll see. Never be the end for Goldberg, but hopefully he can ride off into the sunset on that one and his kid looks at him, you know, with happy eyes and they're good to go.
Yeah, I'd be okay with that. I'd be all right with it. Before we move on to the next match, the Instagram vote, it was 80-20 for Drew. So clearly our followers did not have the same worry about Goldberg winning as you and I did. So 80-20 Drew on the IG vote. But moving on to the next match on the card, it was the SmackDown Women's Championship. Champion Sasha Banks taking on Carmella, which is a repeat of the match we saw at TLC. Chris, I'll go ahead and say it. Sasha hit a pretty sweet bank statement out the gate to gain the upper hand. But Carmella did have Reginald on the side to help distract throughout the match. And it allowed her to take advantage here and there. But all in all, quite frankly, this match was uninspired to me and a bit of a dud. Like, I expect a lot out of both of these competitors, and neither one performed to what I think they are capable of performing at.
Yeah, I thought that the highlight of this match was Sasha Banks' custom Louis Vuitton ring gear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was pretty badass, I'm not gonna lie.
It was pretty badass. Yeah, it was pretty badass. I'll give her that.
Don't know if I've ever seen anybody wrestle in, like, full legit Louis gear, but she is the boss, you know? I felt you there. I thought that it was a good match from the standpoint, like, especially coming off of the initial match and like being short with Goldberg and Drew.
Mm-hmm.
This was a good wrestling match from the standpoint of it was a more typical wrestling match for a title belt.
Yeah.
Carmella, lover or hater, she's got a good way of telling in-ring stories with her personality and the yelling and the comments and things like that. You got Reginald on the side, which is an added factor. But it was a good pedestrian wrestling match.
Right.
You know, that neither of them looked like they were really working too hard from the standpoint of didn't see anything new, didn't really see anything overly exciting. And because the two of them have wrestled a number of times before, it just struck me as like, we've seen this match already.
Yeah.
So from that standpoint, I'm with you.
And so you kind of put it perfectly. My thoughts on it were this match felt like a SmackDown match to me. It didn't have the level of hype that I thought you should dedicate to a pay-per-view, let alone a top four pay-per-view. So and that was my struggle with it. It did have its high points. Most of them involved Carmella's sommelier, Reginald.
Yeah.
You know, we saw a pretty cool leap off his back. Carmella, he got down on all fours.
That was pretty cool.
Carmella jumped off his back. We also saw a pretty fun moment where Sasha got knocked off the apron and Reginald caught her. And then they kind of turned that into a Hurricane Rana on Reginald. Because they've been doing that here and there on SmackDown, some kind of intergender matchup type things where Sasha almost wrestles Reginald.
She did wrestle him.
She did. Yeah, oh, say yeah, match. Not almost. They had a match.
It was a better match than this was with Carmella, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, there you go. But so okay, once again, that kind of proves my point that it should.
Yeah.
This is a championship match at the Royal Rumble pay per view. It should be better. Honestly, the most memorable part of this match for me was Carmella's dive under the bottom rope.
Yeah.
That looked awful. Oh, my God.
She was like 6 inches away from eating steel ramp.
Yeah, it was.
She came out. It was a strong dive. Like she put everything she had into it, but she missed Sasha by about 2 feet. You know, like by the time Sasha caught her on the shoulder, her whole like torso, you know, was beyond Sasha.
Yeah.
Which is not what you ever want to see. And like, I was worried. I thought she was going to eat ramp for a second there.
I thought it was going to be bad. It looked bad, but clearly she wasn't hurt because she immediately popped back up.
Mm-hmm.
But damn, did it look awful. Either way, after all the chaos on the outside, you know, they get back in the ring. Carmella hits a series of super kicks and goes for a near pin. Doesn't get the win here on those pins, gets frustrated, and I guess has a mental lapse. She slips in focus because as she's going to pick up Sasha from the ground, Sasha pulls the reversal, slips her into the bank statement, and as we've seen before, it's very hard to get out of the bank statement. Mella taps, and Sasha retains. She continues to be your SmackDown Women's Champion.
Yeah, it really wasn't in question. Fully expected Sasha to win this and to, I mean, she's the bigger superstar going into Mania with the belt, so.
Yeah.
Good match, pedestrian match, time to move on. That's really how it all worked out. And I hate saying that because I love Carmella, you know me.
Yeah.
And I love Sasha Banks, but it just wasn't their best night.
Yeah, just wasn't their night. That's the best way to put it. And they'll bounce back and they'll have better ones. To wrap it up. The Instagram vote went 70-30 Sasha, so people believe that she was going to retain. I guess she doesn't have the history of retaining, but tonight she came through.
She's been breaking that lately. She's been definitely... The beginning was weird how much they would have her lose in her first title defense, but it seems like the late run, or this current run...
Yeah, she's retaining.
...is not so much, yeah.
Yeah, much better, much better. Then we hit a brief break in the action for a musical performance by Bad Bunny with guest star Booker T. And this one is it's a little tough to say because it was just awkward and a strange mashup all around. I think what struggled here is the lack of a crowd.
Yeah.
Like the musical performances, they happen all the time in WWE. But when there's no crowd to hype you, it just seems awkward. And it was doubled down by the fact that Booker T was just kind of standing there.
Yeah, I had no idea what I was watching. You know, like the best part about it was maybe the song's beat.
Yeah.
Which I was kind of getting into. But yeah, with no crowd to pan out to, it was just Booker T standing sentry in military fatigues looking like G.I. Bro. and then Bad Bunny in like a SWAT outfit. Really aggressively dancing around Booker T.
Yeah.
Which didn't make any sense. And like, I just kept waiting for Booker T to do something.
Yeah.
Which didn't come. So
nope, none of it. Yeah.
And the fact that, and I don't have a problem with, by any means, with Latin music or music in a different language, but just throwing in the fact, not being familiar with the song, not being familiar with the artist. They're telling me this song is about Booker T, but like I can't distinguish anything in it that's about Booker T. I don't even think I heard Bad Bunny say the words Booker T in the song.
Booker T.
So I was just really confused all around.
It was strange because the song is called Booker T. But right. I do know that Bad Bunny is a lifelong WWE fan. And so it's more eyes on the product. So looking at it from a marketing standpoint,
totally
all about it, because Bad Bunny is you know, up. Well, I don't know. It's tough to say if he's up and coming, because I'm pretty confident he's already made it. He's already popular, you know, worldwide. So, you know, looking at it from that aspect, I have no qualms with this. It puts more diverse eyes on wrestling and gives it that spotlight. So when you look at it through that, I'm cool with it, and let's keep it going. But we don't have to sit here and beat this into the ground. It was just out of place.
Yeah, you're right. It was just the way they executed it. It had nothing to do with him or the song or even Booker T. It was just that they chose to, like, make Booker T a stripper pole and have Bad Bunny, like, twerk around him a little bit. I don't know. Like,
right. That is not how I saw it, but now that is in my head. Thank you, Chris. Awesome. So let's get back to the action for the first of two Royal Rumbles on the night. The women's contest is up. And the first two competitors coming out, we see Bayley at the one spot, and then a huge return in Naomi coming in the second spot, getting the full entrance treatment, which is well-deserved. Naomi is a superstar with a fantastic entrance, and I'm glad to see her back in action.
Yeah, it was a really tough break to see Bayley come out at number one, because I kind of felt like right there, her coming off the title run, coming out at number one, it was almost like, okay, she's not going to win. Naomi, though, always glad to see her back. That girl can wrestle up and down, no doubt. And I love her gimmick. But they've got to get her consistent throughout the year. I know she's had some injury issues and things like that over the last couple years. But I feel like I pretty much only see her at the Royal Rumble now, at least the last, you know, 2 years. It's like, here she comes out, big spot, Royal Rumble. She does her thing. And then she's going to disappear again. You know, even though she's very capable of being a top talent.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's super athletic and amazing in the ring. In fact, I think Naomi and Bayley had a cleaner wrestling match at the beginning of this Royal Rumble than pretty much anyone else had had on the night. You know what I mean?
That's fair. Yeah.
Like a match within a match. It was two gifted wrestlers just working their craft and doing it well. So, but then other wrestlers started to come in. We saw Bianca Belair at number three. And then for a bit of time, we had an awesome, awesome action happening in the ring with a bit of a three-way triple threat between Bayley, Naomi, and Bianca Belair.
Yeah, Bianca's showing that she can stand right in the ring with any of the talents. And of course, just recently, she had gotten a pin over Bayley on SmackDown. So she's really just been coming up. I have to give a shout out. I've said it before. She's my girl when it comes to the new top talent, the young folks coming up from NXT to the main roster. And I straight up tweeted it out that she was my pick to win this match.
Yeah, and no one's going to question you on that. Speaking of picks for the match, Bayley was indeed. We've got a few fellas, few friends across the pond this week in Metropolis podcast. Their pick was Bayley. Tough for that number one spot, but that was their pick. Then in the number four spot, we saw Billie Kay come out. She totally avoided the ring and went straight for the announcer's booth, had no interest in getting into the Rumble. She was there to hand out her resume and find anyone that would wanted to team up with her. I'll say it. I love Billie Kay.
It was funny. It was a good, there's always somebody trying to pull over something from that standpoint in a Royal Rumble. So it worked out with this one.
Yeah. And she knows, she knows her place in the card. She's the comedy act. Just keep doing you, Billie Kay.
Yeah.
I love it. I am sports entertained. So
that's a great way to put it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. At number five, we saw Shotzi Blackheart enter on her tank. Shotzi Blackheart is, of course, the NXT superstar. Then at number six, we had Shayna Baszler. And number seven, Toni Storm, another NXT. So a solid group of folks coming in and really filling out the ring.
Yeah, they had a ton of people in the ring for a while. You know, sometimes you see that, sometimes you don't. Sometimes they don't really ever get above, you know, six or seven in a Rumble. But I felt like the women here, like the way they opened this match, it was like everybody stayed in for the first 15 to 20 minutes. So at one point there was like 8, 10 people at least in the ring at the same time.
Oh, yeah. I think once I literally have all caps here. There are so many people in the ring. And it's around when we get to like the 12, 13, 14 spot. Like it just, it was so filled up all the time. Nobody was getting eliminated. Because right here at this spot, we finally get our first elimination of this Women's Royal Rumble. And it was Shayna Baszler eliminating Shotzi Blackheart. Then immediately, number eight. Comes out, and it's Jillian Hall, which is our first legend on the night. And fun little bit with Billie Kay, she agrees on the alliance.
Right, she's the first one to finally team up with Billie Kay. I don't remember Jillian Hall at all.
Neither do I.
Like,
actually,
she was one of the few superstars that they've brought back. Maybe it's just that black hole I still have for like the late 2000s, early 2010s that I haven't watched all the Raws for. But I was trying, and I do not recall her at all.
Well, they did say it was the first time she had stepped into a WWE ring in 10 years.
Yeah, it had been a while.
We got back in right, you know, I think 2011, 12, 13-ish. So she must have left just before we got back into wrestling.
Yep.
But in at number nine is Ruby Riott, and she decides to work with old Billy and Jilly, the tag team there, because Billy Kay has been ongoing trying to join the Riott Squad on, you know, standard week-to-week TV there. So that plays out. At number 10, we got Victoria from NXT. Number 11, Peyton Royce, which is a nice little throwback to the Iconics because Peyton and Billy teamed up. But Billy got a little awkward because she wanted to team up with her former tag team partner, her former Iconic tag team partner, but Ruby was also there, and she's actively trying to join the Riott Squad. So once again, Billie Kay keeping me sports entertained, and I'm here for it. I'm here for it.
Yeah, she did a good job playing the whole thing, and so did the other wrestlers.
Yeah.
You know, with all that was going on and still having this, like, central storyline, you know, playing out in front of you, it worked.
Yeah. Then at number 12, we saw Santana Garrett from NXT, 13, Liv Morgan from the Riott Squad. Got a little bit of a Riott Squad team up right there. And it was at this point in the match that I literally wrote, there are so many people in the ring. Because we're here, we're sitting at 13 entries and only one elimination.
Yeah, definitely weird.
So many bodies in the ring. But of course, we get another elimination right here as Billie Kay turns on Jillian and eliminates her. And then, of course, Liv and Ruby Riott turn on Billie and eliminate her. So as much as we're saying the ring is filling up, boom, boom, two more eliminations.
Yeah, things definitely picked up. And then I know at 14 here, we had a pretty big entrance.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So at 14, Rhea Ripley shows up. And Rhea Ripley is a lot of people's prediction to win this Rumble. She's on fire and has been on fire dating back to Survivor Series 2019. And has just been on a tear. She fought Charlotte at Mania last year, dominating NXT. Her call up to the main rosters, quote unquote, is long overdue. And she immediately comes in, starts kicking ass, throws out Toni Storm, and is just wrecking house on everyone in the ring.
Yeah, it wasn't until she came out that I felt that my prediction for Bianca Belair was at risk.
Yeah.
Because once she came back out, admittedly, I just wasn't thinking Rhea Ripley for whatever reason going into Sunday. And then I was like, oh no. I was like, Rhea Ripley might win this.
Yeah. And she's a legit competitor and legit could win it. So why not? But then at this point, we get a awesome elimination from Shayna Baszler.
Yeah.
And she has a vicious chokeout on Victoria on the side. She had her over the ropes and she was giving her in the clutch and just choked her out and then dropped her.
Yeah,
and
that gnarly.
Was crazy.
Yeah, because Victoria's not a small person. She's definitely bigger than Shayna.
Yeah.
And Shayna straight up picked her up off her feet by the neck, held her there for like 2 seconds, and then just dropped her.
So Shayna Baszler showing that she is still a force to be reckoned with. I know she kind of got a little diluted when she moved up, but you know she can still do some vicious stuff in the ring. We see Rhea eliminate Santana to kind of thin out the crowd a little bit, but then in at 15, it's old Charlotte Flair, and as soon as she entered the ring, she just picks up that feud from last Mania and goes right after Ripley.
Yeah, I thought it was a good call to bring them in back-to-back because it really popped the entire Rumble. The eliminations are picking up. There's a lot of feuds in the ring right now, and I just think the whole energy level went that much higher.
Yeah, oh yeah. So coming in at 16, we saw Dana Brooke, but right before that happened, we actually had another super cool elimination in my eyes from Bayley, and we had Ruby Riott kind of on the side apron, on the outside of the side apron, of the outside of the ropes, and Bayley slid under her legs and then did a power bomb to the outside, but because Bayley went under the ropes, she's still technically in the Rumble, but it does eliminate Ruby. I thought it was an interesting way to kind of flirt with the rules of the Royal Rumble a little bit and kind of using that under the rope status.
Yeah, definitely a creative move. We don't see it enough. I think they should explore some of that a little bit more. I definitely noted it, thought it was awesome. And, you know, just a shame that Ruby Riott was knocked out at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I like Ruby Riott. I like Liv Morgan. I like the Riott squad. I think they, as a tag team, I've said it before about a million times, I love tag team wrestling, and I want to see more of it, especially in the women's division. So that's somebody I would love to see challenge Shayna and Nia. I didn't even think of it earlier, but man, if I could see a Riott squad versus Shayna and Nia feud heading into Mania, I'm here for that.
I kind of want to see them pair up Rhea Ripley with the Riott squad, really legitimize them even further since Ruby just never really popped off and Liv Morgan is definitely a mid-card.
Right.
But she's got that style, fits right in, and I almost feel like if they could make that work and let Rhea Ripley like take over the Riott squad but still have Ruby and Liv with her, they could be a little stable going and really be a force.
Yeah.
Like Ruby and Rhea as a tag team would be legit.
That would be sweet. That would be sweet. Tough thing about that is I think Rhea might be too big for tag teams.
Yeah. Yeah. Right now for sure.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We'll have to see what they do with her. But that was just a thought I had that, you know, if she's not going to be straight up title picture all the time.
Yeah.
That would be another way to get her on the card, legitimize her, put more gold around her, you know, all of the above.
That's true. And we like stables. So
yeah.
here for stables. So as I said, Dana Brooke came in at 16. She literally took everybody out, which is a bit of a reoccurring theme here in the Women's Royal Rumble. When you enter the Rumble, you literally get all your moves in on everybody, and they give you that center space. So there's action everywhere. We see Liv and Bayley tie up. Peyton Royce takes advantage and actually kicks Liv out of the Rumble. So Liv is gone. And we move on here to number 17, which is Tori Wilson, another legend back in the fray. And Tori Wilson just doesn't age. She looks great. She looks great.
It's literally the only note I took down was doesn't seem to age.
Yeah.
She literally looks as good as ever. I mean, she's just one of those people, amazing genes. I know she's got a health company and all of that, she's done a lot of fitness modeling and stuff. So she's clearly making a point to stay in shape like that, but you can just see it. Like, she just still looks almost the same as she did back 20 years ago.
Yeah, she's one that you could see as a legend. I think if at any point she wanted to come back and do a small run, athletically, she could definitely do it. I think there'd be a little bit of ring rust. But as far as conditioning, she'd be fine. So before we get to the weird stuff that happens at the 18th entry, Rhea Ripley has one of the coolest eliminations as well on Dana Brooke. So Rhea was on the outside, and Dana kind of went for a headstand, like feet lock around her head. Rhea wasn't having it. She's all strength, and she actually positions herself to lock Dana up, lifts her up over the ropes, and then power bombs her on the side apron to the knock Dana out. She rolls over onto the floor to eliminate her.
Huge move,
showing off Ripley's strength yet again.
Yeah, I definitely like that.
But the 18, I said it was a weird spot because Ric Flair's music hits at 18. And I almost sent you a text because we've made some jokes about Ric Flair entering the Women's Royal Rumble in the past. And I honestly thought it was going to happen some way, somehow here. It's not outside the realm of possibility because we've seen Centella Morella enter the Royal Rumble before, so yeah. Why shouldn't Ric Flair get in there? But nope, it was a pump fake. It was just Rick coming out to kind of step out there to introduce Lacey Evans when her music hits, and Lacey Evans enters the ring wearing a, you know, Flair robe, which nobody is happy about. She basically gets Flair. Charlotte Flair's pissed. She doesn't like the fact that Lacey's wearing a robe, and she immediately goes under the rope to the outside of the ring to attack her and, like, throws her in the ring. There's feather boas everywhere because the rope just, like, disintegrates. So the ring is covered in these purple feathers.
Yeah.
It's just, it gets a little chaotic at times because in the midst of all of this, we see Peyton Royce get eliminated and then Shayna Baszler eliminate Tori Wilson. And then also, we were talking about the camera stuff earlier. This is where Bianca Belair actually eliminated Bayley.
Yeah.
But because of the camera work, we didn't see it.
They totally missed it. It was the biggest elimination of the night so far, and the camera work completely missed it to the point where they knew they missed it.
Yeah.
And they cycle back to the commentary team to pretty much pull up a replay and be like, oh, you know, in the midst of all this, and like you could tell that they were even just kind of pulling it out like, shit.
Yeah.
You know, because that was the elimination in this this match to this point.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So we'll move on here. And 19-20-21 was Mickie James, Nikki Cross, and Alicia Fox. We got a little bit of craziness with R-Truth running in and thinking he was there for the men's rumble. And he was like, oh, no, the wrong rumble. Then we had the 24-7 goons run in. Alicia Fox actually gets a pin here and becomes the 24-7 title champion for a bit. That ends up getting reversed. We're really just going to fast forward through all of that. As much as I love R-Truth, he's a golden treasure.
Well, real quick, what was actually funny was they called the timeout on how long Alicia Fox was 24-7 champ here before Truth took it back, and it was literally 2 minutes and 5 seconds, so she was pretty much like 24-7 champion as long as the Goldberg-McIntyre match lasted.
I did not realize that, but wow. Okay. Goodness, yeah. I have no comments when the joke championship goes as long as your biggest championship. Okay, fun. Well done, WWE.
Because wrestling.
So in at 22 is Mandy Rose, and that's kind of where, you know, she comes in and hits Alicia Fox and Truth gets his belt back. So 24-7 goons run out. At 23, we see Dakota Kai. And at this point, we see Mickie James get eliminated by Lacey Evans. 24, Carmella enters the fray. And while she's entering, Rhea Ripley throws out Dakota Kai and Mandy Rose. So we got, you know, bodies flying left and right. We're really thinning out the field as we make our way down to the final couple entrances here. Nikki Cross gets eliminated by Carmella. Nikki Cross eliminates Carmella. But Reginald catches her, tries to throw her back in. Mella gets eliminated again. Reggie can't catch her. So Mella's gone. Really, like I said, thinning out the crowd here. 25, we see Tamina. Nobody's meaner than Tamina. Once again, we're just going to kind of pluck through these here. 26 is Lana. 27 was Alexa Bliss. Alexa Bliss had a fun little spot here as she came in and dominated a little bit. She tried to transform. But Rhea Ripley wasn't having it.
I know. That disappointed me. I liked what they did there with, like, the head fake. And, like, some of the TV started going squirrely. And, like, the whole rumble stops and is, like, looking around.
Yeah.
But I was disappointed to see her get kicked out so fast. I mean, I know she's getting all the screen time right now. So she's got her own thing going, whether she's got gold or not. But I really have always liked Alexa. I like this dark version of her that we're getting.
Yeah.
And so I thought maybe she was going to be one that was in there to like the very end, really as a force. And then they just kind of bounced her. So that was a little bit of a bummer, but it was all right in the end.
Yeah, I think it's going to work out in the end. So Ember Moon comes in at 28. Beats everybody up as the status quo here. Because like I said, when everybody comes in, they get to beat everybody up. Nia Jax comes in at 29. And that's a big time spot because Nia Jax is a contender for real.
Yeah, that was definitely noteworthy coming in that late, but they're also playing the story of the fact that she had already had a match.
Right.
So I think she was coming in, you know, a little under her normal power, but just kind of going along with it. So Nia Jax came out 29. Then I'm going to throw it out here just because I thought it was so boring, but Natalya at 30, I thought was such a waste.
Oh.
It was such a yawn moment to me for how important the 30 spot is. Like, nobody believes that Natalya's going to win this.
No, well, and it was predetermined.
Well, right, but still, it was a huge yawn. Like, I knew it was coming, and I was still bored, you know?
Yeah, I half expected her to get attacked on her way to the ring. And, you know, we kind of do that whole Becky Lynch Lana thing from a couple years ago,
yeah,
where Lana gets injured on her way to the ring and somebody else comes in. I didn't think it was going to specifically be Becky Lynch. I really didn't expect to see Becky Lynch tonight.
Yeah, not yet.
Not yet. But somebody, you know, I don't know who it was going to be, but somebody. Ultimately, it didn't work out. So Baszler and Nia end up working together to eliminate a decent chunk of the field. They eliminate Lacey Evans, Ember, Moon, Naomi, Tamina, and then they kind of start fighting each other. And we see that, do they trust each other? Do they not come back into play? And then, of course, Natalya comes in at 30. And we get some decent wrestling happening all around. But ultimately, you know, everyone gets eliminated and we're down to the final four, because that's really what matters here. There were still some solid players in the game, but it was like, all right, let's whittle this down. At this point, we're about like 45 minutes into the match itself. We really got to, you know, get down to the core four, who it's going to be and who's going to compete for this. And the final four were Natty, Rhea Ripley, Charlotte Flair, and Bianca Belair. Bianca Belair still having been in since the 3 spot, Rhea Ripley since the 14, Flair at the 15. So people that have been in it for a while.
Yeah.
Ultimately, Natty gets thrown out. Bianca Belair throws her out, and we're down to Rhea Ripley, Flair, and Bianca Belair. And at this point, you really don't know what's going to happen, because Charlotte Flair, our boy Anthony's pick, you can never count her out.
Right.
She's always in the hunt. You never know. But what we got here was pretty awesome, with a old rivalry, you know, new team-up situation with Bianca Belair and Rhea Ripley working together to throw Charlotte Flair out.
Yeah, they did well. You definitely hit it on the head. No idea who's going to win this when it comes down to the 3 of them. You know, you've got Charlotte, like you said. Rhea easily could be put right back in the spot after being gone for a little while. And then Bianca, who's the new blood, but who is absolutely red hot right now. Everything she's doing on the up and up. So I was still a little nervous at this point, you know. Was just kind of going through my head, like, Charlotte is going to pull this off.
Yeah.
They're going to make her the first woman's back-to-back dual Rumble champion, you know, the whole 9 yards, just another accolade on her. But the young folks weren't having it.
No, not at all. Not at all. And I was happy to see that, because I think it's time to look to the next generation. As good as Charlotte Flair is, she got into the game late, so she's a little older. So we've talked about that in the past, why they throw so many accolades on her so quickly is because I don't think she's long for the wrestling business because of her age. You know, she's not super old, but by professional athlete status, she is a little older. But either way, it's down to the final two, the showdown between Bianca Belair and Rhea Ripley. And they have such a history from NXT. Really solid, like, kind of match within a match here at the end.
Yeah, lots of drama and back and forth, you know, big moves. Both almost threw the other out. Like, they did it all very, very well, especially to be that deep into this match. You know, you get tired very easily to make some botches when you're trying to finish things up here. But ultimately, I thought that they did a great job with it.
Yeah. And in the end, the only knock I have on this little piece is them pumping in the "This is awesome" chant.
Why?
Well, because you know the crowd's not actually making that sound, that's just audio WWE is using. And it's such a natural, fun thing that happens at wrestling events, and it feels like you're forcing it.
Yeah, but I mean, it was deserved. And you've got all the pictures of the fans in the screens who are clapping or cheering and things. Usually it kind of fits in. So, I mean, it's not perfect. I'm with you there, but I didn't take it like that. I thought it was deserved.
No, I mean, deserved, yes. I don't like WWE doing it. And that's really all it is. Like, I just feel like you're forcing it. You're telling me what I'm supposed to chant. I don't like that. I want to just decide on my own. What do I like and what do I not like? And while, yes, I probably would have been chanting this if I had been there.
Well, sure, but I'm saying, given the situation, do you think that you would have been more hyped if it was just, like, silence? Because that's what it would have been.
No, I mean, I don't mind the crowd noise that they pump in. Like, I don't mind the cheering.
Selective
and the
pumping.
Yeah, I don't mind the cheering and the booing. That's generic, and that's, like, probably stuff that they do anyways. It's the, this is awesome, and the, you deserve it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, you know. I just,
I got you.
Not my cup of tea. I just want those to happen organically. And it's obviously not going to happen organically. Anyways, we're completely getting off the point here because this was an excellent, solid little matchup here.
Bring it back to my girl.
Yeah, bringing it back. Chris's pick does get the win here in the end. Bianca Belair with the big elimination, the big victory. She lasted over 46 minutes. Breaking the record for the longest time in the Women's Royal Rumble. Huge victory, huge moment. They had a little interview with her right after it ended. She was all tears, all emotion. It clearly meant a lot to her and definitely means a lot to her fans.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, thinking about where she was in NXT not too long ago, it was literally last year on this show when I was calling her, you know, like my favorite up-and-comer person to watch. And now here she's winning the Women's Royal Rumble with a chance to take on seemingly either Asuka or hopefully Sasha Banks at Mania. And I popped. I was super pumped.
Yeah.
I you know, I think she deserves it all. I'm not too worried about age and things like that in the sport anymore, whereas these folks are really, they come up, they're trained, they're ready, and some of them just stand out above the rest, and she deserves it through and through.
You're not going to get any arguments out of me.
EST.
EST. In the interest of time, we're going to move on here and get to a brief little, they went to the side chat show, more 24/7 nonsense. I'm not going to spend any time on this because literally Jay Elbit said this might be the worst wrestling event in the history of wrestling because Peter Rosenberg takes a low blow opportunity and he's your new 24/7 champion. Awesome. Moving on, but because we have one more match to get through before the big Men's Royal Rumble, and that is the WWE Universal Championship, Roman Reigns going up against Kevin Owens in a last man standing match. These two have been battling for weeks on SmackDown with the help of Paul Heyman and Adam Pearce in various roles, and ultimately it was decided that these two needed to have a knockdown drag-out war. And honestly, that is what they did because the match started out in the ring with big haymakers being delivered on both sides, but quickly started to move throughout the Thunderdome.
Yeah, this match was intense. It was brutal. There was lots of chairs, lots of impacts, lots of huge bumps. I really liked how they fought through the Thunderdome and up the stack of TVs where you could literally see, you know, both sides of the TV boards and, you know, the different fans right there in front of them.
Yeah.
And I kept wondering to myself what those fans were thinking, you know, because I doubt that the fans have like a first person view from where they're shown on the board. Like, I imagine they're just seeing the product that we are all seeing on TV.
Yeah.
And then their webcam is just coming back through. But I kept being like, man, you know, what does that guy think where they're fighting, like, on his face?
Yeah.
You know, because I remember how excited we were when we went to Clash of Champions and Becky and Sasha came through our section and were, like, 10 feet away, let alone, like, you know, Roman driving KO, like, through you on the TV screen. You know what I mean? Like,
how cool
is that guy today?
That was pretty sweet. There was a moment because I was watching and there was a moment where there was a little kid that appeared to look like he recognized himself. Like, that's me. And he got up off his couch and got a little closer to his camera. So I think at least a few of them must have realized that they were seeing themselves on camera.
Yeah.
Which was pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought it was cool to see them go up in, like, the different layers. And, they, you know, they were fighting up there. They were damaging the TV screens. Ultimately, I think Roman threw KO off of maybe, like, a 10 or so foot drop through some tables. Like, it was good utilization of the Thunderdome.
Yeah, that was, that massive spot was actually a recreation of something that happened on SmackDown a few weeks ago, but it was one row up higher.
Yeah.
They did a recreation, but they went up higher. But this was just basically 25 minutes of just pure chaos. it's very hard to say break down point to point. It's really just a lot of big hits and big highlights. We saw WWE also get into the golf cart game and their own, you know, AEW did the Matt Hardy, Sammy Guevara golf cart, you know, rundown in various shows. And we got that also here in WWE as they stumbled into backstage area. Roman plowed over KO. And it was more than just a clip. I mean, he actually took him out and took him through the front of the golf cart.
Oh, this was way more intense than what AEW did.
Yeah.
Let's just flat out say it. KO looked at what AEW did and said, I can do that better. And then they did.
Yeah.
The way they did this, after KO went stumbling through the back and they were following him and Roman was nowhere to be seen. Roman was still up on the Thunderdome ledge when KO started walking back.
Yeah.
And so then he stumbles through. And they're at the Tampa Bay Rays stadium, so that place is huge. So we see they've got like a whole other ring set up in the back for them warming up and practicing and whatever.
Right.
Which that was cool in itself, honestly, because you don't typically see that. But the camera's like right behind KO, like perfect like third-person video game angle, you know, right behind him. And so you don't hear or see the golf cart at all. It's just straight up vehicular homicide. Because Roman is just driving this car and you don't see it. And then boom, and KO goes through the windshield, completely shattered the windshield, comes into the golf cart and rolls out of it. Like, the dude should have died. It was probably maybe the best vehicle-related bump I've seen in wrestling. Like, I'm just going to say it. Like, it's up
there. Putting it up there.
It's up there.
I mean, it was really good. I'm not going to sit here and say that it wasn't amazing because it was really, really good. And they continued to have really awesome spots as they fought through the backstage. At one point, we saw KO get Roman down on a table. And sure enough, right next to it was a forklift. So KO just lifted the forklift up, climbed to the top of it, and did one of the sweetest Swanton bombs through a table I've ever seen.
Oh, Jeff Hardy was getting wood. Like, that dude was pumped about seeing that Sentai. It was picture perfect from about 20 feet up.
Yeah.
And I thought he was going to die. But, I mean, the amount of pain and suffering and bumps that KO took in this match were insane. It was just one after another, huge spots. And he just kept getting up and battling them even more. Like, it really fed into the last man standing stipulation.
Stipulation. And it's too perfect wrestlers for that because, you know, Roman is good at punching and kicking and doing big spots. I think I counted upwards to 3 Superman punches, 4 attempted, 2 spears, you know, and we'll get kind of to where they go next. They find their way back through Gorilla onto the entrance ramp where we see a massive spear through an LED board.
Yeah.
So they are all about driving themselves through tables, through barricades, through the front of golf carts. These two kicked each other's asses through and through, downright annihilated each other.
Yeah, and it was really actually a good match. I think Roman, with the current character and the heel turn that he did, is really working out, and it's really grown on me, and it's really fitting. Like, I kept thinking to myself, and I really have over the last couple of weeks, like, they should have done the Roman heel turn way long ago. They should have leaned into it when the fans were just absolutely obliterating him with boos every time he came out, because he's really good at it. And between him and Heyman and the whole 9 yards, like, I think it's really working. He's become a little bit better character to me. And this match just was kind of keeping that going. And KO is always great. You know, we've known that KO can give out really hard-hitting matches anytime. But unfortunately, I thought that the ending was a little bit of a stain on what was otherwise almost a perfect last man standing match.
I agree with you there. It is unfortunate that it kind of got foiled here at the end, because ultimately what ended up happening was Roman got out handcuffs, which is a playback to a steel cage match that they had a few weeks ago, but it gets reversed. And KO ultimately handcuffs Roman to the bottom of a light fixture in a kind of a laying down position. And in a last man standing match, you need to be able to get to your feet. So Roman was incapable of getting to his feet. The ref was on the 9 count when Roman, in an act of desperation, grabs the ref, throws him into one of the fixtures, knocks him out. And then, of course, Paul Heyman shows up with a key. And a new ref comes out to start the count. And if this had worked seamlessly, it probably would have gotten to another, like, 9 count, and Heyman would have gotten the handcuffs up. But Heyman couldn't quite get the key where it needed to be, so they couldn't get the handcuffs off. And it just kind of slowed everything down right here at the end because it was hard-hitting, high action, really, really good. And it just was marred by this kind of awkward finish because ultimately the ref had to stop the count.
Just stopped mid-count at 5.
Just stopped him. Yeah, he
and
like
it was clearly 5.
5. Yeah, he just stopped counting. Like, you just stopped hearing it. And so they get Roman free, and the match continues. He gets KO into a guillotine, chokes him out, and then the 10 count happens, and Roman Reigns retains. But it sucks because you had like 23 minutes of just pure action. It was really, really good. And in the final moments, the execution was just off.
Yeah, it was just a weird stunt. I kept questioning whether or not Heyman was even supposed to be involved. And so I'd actually like to know if the attack on the ref that Roman did to stop the initial count was improvised as well. Because if you noticed multiple times, like on camera, they showed Roman trying to break the handcuff chain.
Yeah.
Like, he was trying to pull it. And so it almost struck me as, like, that was the gig. Like, he was going to break the chain with his strength and then pop back up right before that count and then probably go into the choke or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But it almost struck me as, oh, shit, that he couldn't break the chains. So then they were, like, getting Paul, and they were just kind of scrambling there at the end. Maybe it was a little bit of both. But that's what I took it as, was this was like a scramble to fix the fact that that gag had gone wrong.
Yeah, I could see that happening, because what he did end up doing was he kind of got himself to
to
his feet. He was in a squatted position, and on a technicality, he is on his feet.
Michael Cole's like explaining it to us.
Yeah.
Like, technically, he's on his feet.
Yeah. So, whatever. It's still a really good match. We're still very impressed with Roman right now. Our IG followers had this one as a dead 50-50 split.
Ah.
A lot of people thought KO was going to come through, but I just don't see them disrupting Roman's run right now. It's just so good.
Yeah, not yet. I think that he's got some fire going. He's got a good storyline, and it needs to carry at least through Mania.
Yeah.
And if you know us, I hate on Roman every day of the week and do not really like him with the title typically, but credit where credit's due. I think this is the best version of Roman we've seen since probably the Shield days.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. When we get to our final stuff here, we look at Mania predictions and match of the night. This one's up there for me, and it might be the first time ever Roman has had a match of the night contender for me. But that brings us to the big one, the main event of the evening, the Men's Royal Rumble event. This one got started hot and heavy with the pre-announced number one and number two entrants into the Royal Rumble, that being Edge at one and Randy Orton at two, picking up right where they left off with their rivalry before Edge got injured. And I mean, Edge went at Orton before he even got to the ring. So it was out the gate, let's do this.
Yeah, I liked how they just picked the intensity right back up. Of course, Edge got injured, which was a big bummer after coming back. So it was super good to see him come right back in. Didn't expect him to really end up being at one, like, leading into it. I know that they pre-announced it, but before that announcement, I was like, okay, Edge is going to come back. But I just wasn't expecting him to be in at number one. But it made sense. It gave them a chance to kind of put that right back front and center with him and Orton. It was a little bit of unfinished business, if you will.
Yeah.
And he gave it to Orton. And, I mean, they were in and out. You know, he was hitting them with chairs. Ultimately, you know, I was surprised that Orton was even that far recovered from his third-degree burns. Like,
right,
clearly,
his face looked really good.
Yeah, I mean, Tommy Copper Lucha masks. Apparently just do it, man, you know? Like, medical miracles over here, because he was looking like he was ready to go back to the beach.
Dude, it's true. I was thinking, like, his face was so red on Monday.
Uh-huh.
And then today, he had Well, makeup. He had no makeup on. Yeah. His face was perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But whatever. Enter at number three is Sami Zayn, the conspiracy theorist kind of role he's taking right now. And he jumps right in and starts helping Orton. And then we get Mustafa Ali. He jumps in at number four, immediately starts teaming up with Edge as well. In at number five, Jeff Hardy comes in. It's finally someone to help Edge because this team is beating him down.
From the moment that they started working the Orton potentially hurt angle after him and Edge got at it, and you know they were looking at his knee, we had the other folks come in, Sammy and Ali and everybody. I thought that this kind of took a dive, to be honest. Like, it started out so intense and really a tone that Orton and Edge set, and then just from there, it got really boring for the first half. I just have to admit, I thought that it just, especially compared to the women's and everything, like I felt like it just slowed back down. Edge just started getting his ass kicked by everybody for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And it took a little while to get back up. I wasn't overly excited about like the first, I don't even know, probably 10, 12 guys here.
None of them felt like true contenders.
Mm-mm.
Because we'll run through it here. But as Chris said, you know, right after Jeff Hardy comes in, Orton and Edge get back to the outside and start fighting on the announcer's booth while the rest of them remain in the ring. There's some brutal chair shots on Orton's knee. He's quote-unquote injured and needs to be taken to the back. So yes, we are playing that storyline once again. Edge gets back in the ring and continues the fight. But at the 6, 7, and 8, we see Ziggler come in, Shinsuke Nakamura, and then Carlito. And honestly, the only big spot out of the next three here is Carlito looks swole as hell.
Yeah, I was never a huge Carlito fan. He was just a mid-tier guy. He wasn't a bad wrestler, but back in the 2000s, I didn't like his shtick. I didn't like his character, and he was just kind of a bland guy for me. But when he came back here, he was like twice the size.
Yeah, he was jacked.
Yeah, I was almost like, get this guy a contract, man. Like, he's ready to go. There's apples working for him.
Well, as Michael Cole said, there must be something in those apples.
Yeah, dude, HGH and steroids.
Well, I did hear there's rumors floating about that they've gotten Carlito back on contract in a producer type role. So he could do what MVP has been doing for the past year, where he shows up and then he's both working as semi on-screen talent as well as a backstage producer.
That makes sense.
Good for him, but he looks great. So if he's wrestling right now on Raw at the time of recording, then, you know, good for him, but hopefully they do something with him. And if not, hey, it was a good one-off. Either way, we're moving on to 9, 10, 11, which was Xavier Woods, Big E, and John Morrison. We got some fun tag team action here as Big E and Xavier Woods work together. But ultimately, like you said, it was a little dry all around because you keep adding bodies to the ring. But nobody, maybe outside of like Big E, feels like a real threat, including Shinsuke Nakamura, who is a previous Royal Rumble winner. But they haven't quite been using him correctly. Like, clearly John Morrison isn't going to win the Rumble at this time.
No, all I could think about when John Morrison came in was last year when Brock almost killed him. Because remember when he came in last year and Brock threw him out in like the most violent way and he just like smacked the barrier? I was just like, it's just a modern miracle that he's even here to compete in this Royal Rumble at this point.
Right? Oh, man. Well, and then at number 12, we saw Ricochet. I'm going to pause here for a brief second and say Ricochet actually should not have been in this match because he fought AJ Styles for an opportunity to be in the Royal Rumble and lost.
Oh, yeah.
So that's storylines.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What? Because wrestling. But at number 13, we got Elias. Elias had a fun little back and forth with Carlito that ultimately ended in the elimination of Carlito. So good for Elias. That'd be a interesting little feud.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, Elias is just, I don't know where he's going to go with it. You know, like I thought he was getting an actual push there for a little bit. Then he just became the musical, you know, entertainment in between matches. And we've seen him. The dude can do chin locks like nobody's business. We saw him in his NXT days. He can wrestle.
Yeah.
He's a great technical wrestler. He's got a lot of power, but he's just stuck.
Yeah.
And so you don't believe really anything is coming from him because he's been pretty much kind of the throwaway, let anybody pin him kind of guy.
Yeah. Well, and he did a spot for Undertaker, I think, in Saudi Arabia, yeah. Which, like, is an honor to be pinned by the Undertaker, yes, but is it really doing anything for your career moving forward? No.
Right. No.
So, I don't know. Yeah, hopefully they figure it out. He's stuck in the mid-card like a lot of guys. At number 14, we see Damian Priest come in, and hopefully when he gets called up soon, he doesn't get stuck in the mid-card because he's got a lot of upside.
Yeah, I'd like to see him actually stay in NXT a little bit longer. Like, good for him to come up. The dude is a beast. He's got a lot of potential. I'd almost like to see him put on a little more weight because he's kind of lanky for being so tall.
Yeah.
Like, we saw him go toe-to-toe with Kane, like, standing eye-to-eye, and he's pretty much just as big from the height standpoint. I like the Archer of Infamy gimmick. You know, he's had some good matches, especially over the last 6 months to a year. But I don't know if he's quite ready to make the jump, and I don't know if I want him to. You know, we just keep seeing these guys come up and getting these short little runs. Like, where was Keith Lee? I know he's probably had some issues, but, like, Keith Lee got about as big a push out of the gate, out of NXT, as it could happen, and then now he's just, where's Keith Lee?
Yeah, where's Keith Lee? Well, and he had a one-on-one with Brock Lesnar in last year's Rumble and looked like he could be the man, and now he's, like, nowhere to be seen.
So I'd rather see a guy like Damian stay down there for a little bit longer. You know, they've still got a great brand. It's not even like a down there thing anymore. But I think he could be used better on NXT than he probably would be on main card at this moment. But still, in the Royal Rumble here, big honor, and he did great.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that he had a lot of good spots. You know, he had a good couple throwouts, and he was in there for a while.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But we'll move on to 15, which was The Miz. On his way to the ring, The Miz decided that he was going to destroy Bad Bunny's DJ booth because of an interaction that had happened earlier in the night backstage. Of course, that ends up pissing off Bad Bunny. Bad Bunny comes down to the ring. Damian Priest ends up working with Bad Bunny somehow. There's another weird... Bad Bunny just seemed a bit out of place all night.
Yeah.
You know, but hey, he's the celebrity spot. We do get a pretty crazy Bad Bunny top rope dive after Damian Priest eliminates John Morrison and The Miz on the outside. It looked better. It wasn't great, but it looked better than Snoop's a couple weeks ago.
It was definitely better than Snoop's dive. It made me think about when Stephen Amell had the big dive at SummerSlam a couple years ago. I think Stephen may have still been a little bit better, but this dive for Bunny was good, and it was from the rope to the outside, which always kind of ups the ante a little bit.
Yeah, his foot slipped on the rope a little bit. We're not going to overanalyze Bad Bunny here.
It did, but though. I saw it. He still made it, though.
He still made it. At 16, we saw Matt Riddle, or just Riddle, as he is known in WWE, come in and go full strike fest with Shinsuke. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, Riddle got another good Rumble appearance. I think last year he was in there for a good while, and I thought he was strong, really, here.
Yeah, we're going to touch on that later, because the next person that came in was Daniel Bryan, and later down the Rumble, Riddle and Bryan have an amazing showcase of technical wrestling.
Yeah, oh my God, yeah. That was actually a highlight for the match within a match, was their interaction there towards the end. My only note that I had on Daniel Bryan when he came in here was, he's doing Daniel Bryan things.
Like, he's doing a lot of flying knees.
You're
right. But the exciting thing about the Rumble, because one thing we're saying all these names and these new people that are coming in, there are people being eliminated throughout all of this, but like Edge is also in there. So like, we're getting these sweet little matches within matches with Edge, you know, like Edge going one-on-one with Ricochet. Whoever thought we'd see that? Like, you know, in moments like this, where it's Daniel Bryan and Riddle going at one another, these are things that we don't typically get to see week to week,
right?
But we'd love to. So, like, it's a taste of what we could be getting.
Yeah, for sure.
At number 18, Kane came in. Kane now officially has more Royal Rumble appearances than anyone else. He also gets a couple eliminations to extend his eliminations, more eliminations than anyone else in Rumble history. More notches to a Hall of Fame career. Kane is amazing.
Can't argue with Kane. Glad to see. I was wondering if he was going to continue his run. You never know at this point, but he seems to make Royal Rumble his thing. And then harkening back to what I mentioned earlier, you know, the highlight for me of Kane being in there wasn't when he got the hug fest, you know, Team Hell No reunion with Daniel Bryan, but it was when he went toe to toe with Damian Priest.
Yeah.
And Priest ultimately overcame him and got that big nod, you know, for throwing out the Big Red Machine.
That is big time, especially for somebody that is, you know, still young in their career. That's a big throw out because Kane's a big deal. Definitely a Hall of Famer and, you know, maybe has more accolades. I don't know if he's ever won it, but he's definitely got the rest of the stats that come along with the Rumble.
Yeah, he's kind of like Dan Marino. He's got all the stats, but no ring.
No ring. Wow. We're going to go there. All right. So number 19 is King Corbin. Corbin coming in and cleaning up. He eliminates Shinsuke Nakamura. Then at 20, we see Otis. Otis is amazing, but he got a little too excited once he entered the ring and got thrown out after going for the Yokozuna-style drop. Corbin ultimately throwing him out. Then 21, we see Dominic Mysterio in his first ever Royal Rumble match. He's been feuding with Corbin recently, so naturally goes right after him and gets that elimination.
Dude, but not before taking one of the biggest spine busters I've ever seen. When he came into the match, Corbin just picked him up and almost put him through the ring.
Yeah. I mean, Dominic is so young in his career, and I think he's probably had less than like 20 matches in his entire career, and they are just beating him senseless between the kendo stick stuff with Seth Rollins.
Yeah.
Now Corbin kicking his ass on the regular. Like, you know, he's not going to stay green for long.
No, they're treating him like David Arquette in a backyard wrestling match.
So in at 22 was Bobby Lashley. Bobby Lashley is just the biggest human being on the planet. Honestly, he's just so big. He legit cleans everybody out, removes Dominic Mysterio and Damian Priest, then has a pretty solid back and forth with Big E. I like to say it, two big hosses doing big hoss things.
Yeah, I really liked him and Big E going at it. They just seem very well paired together. It really made me want to get a full match between the two of them, like champion versus champion or something like that.
Ooh, an Intercontinental versus U.S. championship would be pretty sweet.
Yeah.
That sounds really awesome, actually. Definitely. Well, the next person into it was number 23, Hurricane Helms. He comes into the match, goes for that double choke slam on Lashley and Big E, but it doesn't quite work out the way he wanted it to.
Dude, he came in the size of like a cat one. Last year, he was like a cat four. You just remember how big he was last year? Like he had just gotten off the couch. But this year, I don't know if it was the DDP yoga or what, but he looked significantly better as far as his health, his ring shape. And it was good to see him come back. I don't know if we'll ever get too much that isn't like that kind of jokey, entertaining side of him with WWE, but he's popped up here and there.
Yeah.
He was in that AEW Matt Hardy video from a couple months ago in that weird role, and then he got back here, but just glad to see he's looking better than he was last year.
Staying fit, you know, you never want to see these guys fall off. I don't know if you stayed up and watched the Yokozuna documentary after the Royal Rumble, but that was a bit heartbreaking, and you kind of see what happens to some of these wrestlers when they fall from grace, you know, and let their bodies go a little bit. But it's good to see him back and healthy.
Yeah.
You know, and if it is that DDP yoga, then that's one more person that DDP has saved.
I don't know if it was or not. I just assume that all wrestlers getting in shape are on DDP yoga at this point.
Oh, yeah. the man has done something. I don't know. But number 24, huge moment for anyone that's a fan of the Attitude Era. He did a brief spot last year, and it teased if he could be ring ready, because a lot of people thought he'd never be able to get back in the ring. But Christian returns at number 24, immediately comes in and helps the entire ring essentially eliminate Bobby Lashley. And then we get a series of Edge and Christian teaming up. Honestly, and probably for the next 5 minutes of this match, I was totally distracted because I'll fully admit I was crying. Because Christian is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. I am notorious for really liking tag team wrestling and then liking the tag team partner that doesn't actually go on to be the bigger superstar. And as big as Captain Charisma was, he definitely was never as big as Edge. And just seeing him back in the ring, seeing the team up, seeing the hug with Edge, I'm telling you, man, I was crying. It was emotional.
I mean, peeps all around the world were rejoicing. I mean, it was the moment and super, super cool, because if anybody knows some of the behind the scenes with these two, you know that Edge and Christian are legitimately best friends.
Yeah.
It's like Kyle and I here. They've known each other forever. They're practically brothers. And, you know, you've seen that through the Edge and Christian show when they did the podcast that totally reeked of awesomeness and just everything they've always done. So, and I thought it was kind of a cool moment, to be honest, because that podcast a couple years ago was one of the bigger podcasts out there, especially in the wrestling
world. Yeah.
I know. I listen to it all the time. They had the show on WWE Network that was also great. They're just creative, entertaining guys, and, you know, no matter what they touch.
Sure.
And then they announced that it was stopping, and a lot of people were like, what the hell? Because it was really kind of hitting its stride. It was only in, like, its third season.
Yeah.
But we know now that they stopped it because Edge had to start training for this potential comeback. Like, they've told us that now that time has gone by. So it was really kind of this interesting moment, because it was like, okay, well, Christian got left behind yet again, and then now here we go. Edge just kind of pulled him back, and they had this amazing, you know, 20 minutes at the end of this Rumble here. I was with you. It wasn't tears in my eye, because I was always more of an Edge guy than a Christian guy, but I don't know how you couldn't have watched that and just not gotten the warm and fuzzies.
Oh, yeah. Now, I'm telling you, I full on, like, grown man just sobbing watching it, watching wrestling. It sounds strange, but it was just super emotional, and it takes you back, and there's a lot going on in the world right now, and for something like this, it just is pure joy. It takes you back to a time when a lot of other things in life were just much simpler, and that's really all it was. And I, you know, I'm not going to sit here and harp on it, but it got emotional for me, and I really enjoyed seeing the tag team moves. The Unprettier, he got a lot in. I'm also just really happy to see him fit, very similar to Shane Helms. He's fit. He's back in the ring. He's taking bumps. And it's just, it's awesome to see, man. It's awesome to see. There's not much else to say.
Well, I got to give a call out, because you and I, we texted just a little bit when this was happening last night. And that tag team Alabama Slam roll-up that the two of them did at like 50 years old was amazing.
Yeah. It looked just as clean as it was when they were 20.
Yeah. They didn't miss a beat. I bet you they were training together too. Like, when Christian came out looking ripped, you knew, like, they had been pushing each other in the whole nine yards.
Yeah. Oh, I hope so. But anywho's, number 25, we saw AJ Styles. Number 26, we saw Rey Mysterio. Take a brief pause, because Rey Mysterio wanted to sponsor his mask, and I guess WWE is now pushing beer on us, so that's fun.
That was the oddest thing.
I hated all of it.
Yeah.
I hate all of it.
It was odd. It was like Michael Cole was even struggling to get through it to explain to us that now there's this promo, and they said that Rey Mysterio is now the official spokesperson of Victoria Beer, and they were announcing this partnership, and the whole thing was really, it felt like it was like an MMA announcement before like a weigh-in, but it completely overshadowed Rey Mysterio coming in and kind of left me just puzzled, and then I feel like by the time I kind of got over that, he was thrown out.
Yeah, yeah, who knows? So, I didn't like it. It wasn't for me. Maybe it's because I was still just raw from the emotion of Christian. But I didn't like any of this, man. I really didn't. Ultimately, Omos and AJ kind of helped me get through this moment where I just hated everything in the Rumble, because there were some fun spots here where Omos just kept saving AJ from getting eliminated, catching him on the side. And then Omos actually got involved and eliminated Big E himself.
He picked him up over the top rope from the outside. Like, it was so impressive how he could reach up there and then grab a man as big as Big E and pull him over the top rope. Not on the apron. From flat-footed on the ground outside, he grabbed him by the shoulders and pulled him over. Like, Omos is an interesting character, but he's a beastie dude.
He's a big dude. It'll be very, very interesting when they start getting him in-ring action and what he can do. Because I feel like right now they might be training him on the side and making sure he can wrestle before they get him directly involved in ring. But if they can, he will be a force to be reckoned with.
Well, they're pretty. It's Michaels and Diesel, 2.0.
Oh,
like AJ
true.
And Omos. Like it's the same thing in my opinion. And so eventually we're gonna see Omos and AJ go at it.
Yeah.
And
oh,
it's gonna
yeah.
be that big man, little man thing. But yeah, the other cool part that he had with him, I think right after the Big E, there was a moment where Mysterio was trying to give a 619 to AJ.
Yeah.
And Omos just stopped his feet on the yeah. swing and then like pushed him back in the ring, and then AJ went after him again. So it was a couple cool moments.
Ultimately, we'll move on here to number 27, which was Sheamus. Sheamus getting a legit little spotlight here. You know, coming in and tearing it up. I think he got a few chops on AJ, got a few chops on Edge for sure. Then at number 28, we had Cesaro, which was a few folks' dark horse pick. Thought maybe Cesaro was going to make a run. We teased a bar team up, but didn't happen. But we did get a couple swings.
Yeah, a couple swings. We all know I love Cesaro, but at this point, I just know he's never going to get over the hump.
Yeah.
Like, there's, I would be happy if he did, but he's not even dark horse to me anymore.
Oh.
He's just going to be a mid-card guy that's never going to get it.
He's just never going to happen, yeah.
If it was going to happen, I think it was already going to happen by now, unfortunately. He deserves it, but...
True. Well, rumor mill, his contract is up just after Mania. He's been in WWE for 10 years. He's in his early 40s. You know, it's either time to acknowledge that you're not going anywhere or bet on yourself.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We will see what happens. We're going to get our last two entrances here. 29, the return. First appearance since Survivor Series. Seth Rollins is back. And then at number 30, Braun Strowman.
Yeah, definitely expect Rollins to come back. And when I saw him at 29, I was like, oh man, that is great positioning for him to win this. And set up a, you know, maybe he go and take down Roman type feud for Mania. And then Strowman comes out right afterwards. And I was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
And I was like, the same thing. Like, how does Braun Strowman coming in fresh at 30 not win this thing?
Right. Well, ultimately, it took a massive team up on Strowman. We saw a sweet double spear by Edge and Christian on Strowman. Just wild. But, I mean, Strowman got his time in because, you know, He tossed a few people. He is a force, monster among men. So he's going to toss a few people, really thin the crowd for us, because we're at the end. Anyone that's going to come out has come out, and we got to start whittling it down. So as we said earlier, Daniel Bryan got those highlights against Matt Riddle. Awesome technical wrestling. He also got some highlights against Edge and Christian, which, you know, as a wrestling fan, you're like, ooh, man, a Daniel Bryan Edge match would be really sweet.
Yeah, I definitely went through my head a couple of times.
Then we got Rollins. He was going one-on-one with Riddle. Then, of course, Braun Strowman all not having it and just kind of throwing people around. Ultimately, it ended up being Strowman and Rollins against Edge and Christian.
Right.
Right there at the end. Rollins tries to team with Strowman, saying, hey, we're the future. We're the young guys. Let's take these two out. Then you and I will battle. Strowman says, no, thank you, sir, and slams him down. And which, I don't know. I feel like it would have been a fun little team up there if that could have happened.
It could have been, but I think that late into the game, it was tough to work in anything legitimate, you know, decent spot. It was getting to the end of the night. Maybe if they had all been in there a little bit earlier, we could have gotten a little match within the match between them, but I think they kind of were pushing it to the end here.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. So, you know, with Rollins out, Strowman decides to take on Edge and Christian by himself. Braun tries to throw Edge out, but Edge, using his veteran techniques, holds on. Christian comes over for the help. Out of nowhere, Rollins pops back up and actually dumps Christian and Braun Strowman out. Then goes for the curb stomp on Edge, but Edge reverses with the toss. You think Edge is the winner, but there is no bell. Why is there no bell? It's because old Randy Orton didn't officially get eliminated, and then boom, RKO out of nowhere. Oh my God, it's going to happen. Randy Orton's about to win the Royal Rumble. He goes for the toss out on Edge, but just in that last moment, Edge reverses, throws out Orton, and there it is. Edge is your Royal Rumble winner.
Yeah, I was super, super pumped. I had picked Rollins to win this, but I think in the tweet I sent out, I said that I would have preferred, you know, Keith Lee, who didn't end up being in it, or Edge. So I was super pumped about that. When Orton came back out, I was like, oh my God, no, it's not going to happen. And then they're going to have Orton, you know, pull some shady stuff and steal it from him. But they stuck with it. Super deserving. No issues with him being an older guy. As we said, when he came back, his career was taken from him. He deserves a full, legit run, whether he wins the belt at Mania or not. But I'm really interested to see who's going to pick. You know, yeah. I think that both champions right now would make for great matches, and he shows that he can still have pretty much any kind of match and high caliber matches. He showed that with Orton, you know, before he got hurt. So I don't know what you think, but I don't know if I could even make a call yet on who he's going to pick.
Yeah, it's very, very tough. And especially, he went 58 minutes in this match.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's crazy. He's the third person to win it from the one spot. So athleticism is there. And you think he could compete with both Drew and Roman. I think I'm leaning Drew simply because they don't want to disrupt Roman right now.
That's fair.
He's on this tear. But then again, the problem with Drew, it's a face versus a face.
That's true. I mean, but Edge also hasn't had the Universal title. So if the idea is to get him a different belt than, you know, the World Championship or the WWE Championship that he held back in the day, the Universal title there would make sense. So I think they could go either way.
Yeah.
And maybe if he does do Drew, they find some way to either take Drew more towards the heel, or maybe even Edge towards the heel. We know that Edge can do either side.
The fans love him,
but he was one of the best heels when he was the true, you know, on his top of his game, rated R superstar. So yeah, we'll have to see.
I think the wild card match that is out there, but definitely is not going to happen, even though it's exactly what I would want to happen, is to challenge Finn Balor for the NXT Championship.
Him and Finn would make for an awesome match. I think that he's too big of a name for NXT.
Yeah.
You know, and I know they tried to prove that, you know, with Finn and Charlotte going down there, and it would be cool. It would get NXT some ratings, which they need over AEW right now. But I think that is a little bit much.
Yeah.
The match would be awesome. The belt, I think, would be a little low for Edge.
No, I agree with that. And that's why I said, like, I'd want it to happen. I think it would be amazing. But there's no way you bring Edge back for this glory run and then use it on the NXT Championship. And it sounds like we're discrediting the NXT Championship. But honestly, when you're comparing the NXT Championship versus the WWE champion, you know which one you want.
Right. Yeah. Totally different.
So that'll wrap this up here. There's three big questions. So I'm going to have you pick. Is it going to be Drew or Roman?
I'm going to say Roman, just from the heel aspect. I think you got to have that face heel. I don't think we're going to get Edge as a heel right now. And so I think that they build that.
Nice. And on the women's side, Asuka or Sasha for Bianca Belair?
Sasha all day long. Asuka would be great, but I really think that Bianca and Sasha are a little bit closer in attitude and character and personality. I think that they can really build it up. Bianca's coming up as a lovable face right now. The boss we know can play a great heel when she has to. And so I think that they could have a much better feud than Bianca and Asuka would.
I could see that. And Bayley could help Turner.
True. Yeah, actually. Yeah, Bayley could be played in there.
And bring them back together if they wanted to. Why not? So that does bring us to match of the night.
Match of the night. I actually would have to go Women's Royal Rumble. I thought start to finish, they really did it. I thought the energy was a little higher. Like I said, I thought the first half of the Men's Rumble was a little slow for me, even though the back half was great and it was still a pretty solid Rumble. But I think all in all, I really liked the Women's Rumble this year.
Nice.
What about you?
I actually think it was Roman and KO.
Ah, okay.
And like I said, it's rare for me to say that I really enjoyed a Roman match, but that one had me invested more than any of the other ones.
Yeah.
You know, it was just every moment they were doing something crazy and big. I know it failed at the end, so like obviously it's not going to get the 5-star status, but I was entertained the entire time. There were no yawn moments. There were no, hey, I'm going to grab a snack. It was, I want to see everything these two do to each other.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I can't argue with that. And so who did you think the Edge was going to face, and who did you think Bianca was going to face? Let's wrap up with that.
I think I could definitely see Sasha, so maybe go Sasha unless Asuka loses it before. We do have two pay-per-views before we get to Mania, so if Asuka doesn't lose, then Sasha. If Asuka does lose, whoever she loses to. And then on the Edge side, we'll go ahead and say Roman. We'll go ahead and say Roman. I think that would be huge for, you know, for Roman. One more legend that he potentially knocks off.
Yeah, I think it just makes more sense on that side. Well, this year's Rumble was one of the better shows we've seen from WWE's main roster in recent months, providing fans with a few moments that won't be forgotten anytime soon. We were excited to see Edge return from injury alongside his longtime friend and tag partner Christian, and it was certainly a special way for the Rated R superstar to capture his victory and secure his return to the main event of WrestleMania. Be sure to find us on social media and share your thoughts on the outcomes of the Rumble, as well as your predictions on who Edge is going to face at the Showcase of the Immortals. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this chapter, be sure to hit the subscribe button to get new chapters of Geek Ketchup every 2 weeks on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Be sure to follow the show on social media, and you can find us on Facebook and YouTube at Geek Ketchup Podcast, or on Twitter and Instagram at Geek Ketchup Pod. Links to all these accounts are in the show notes below and on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com. Stay saucy, you nerds.